This day would be very appropriate for a prophetic sermon, but because of the Pentecost season, I am not going to give a sermon on prophecy. But I didn't want to wait on those two clips because so much is happening right now, and it no doubt can get our mind on going to the news from the world or the news from Europe. Oftentimes in the morning I get up and I just hit my phone, and then I go to world news because I know that there's nothing too much different in the U.S. news that's going to be important. I would catch enough of that anyway. Well, a couple of weeks ago, I think many of us know that Mr. Pentland was married to Charlotte Ingram. We were down in Santa Rosa Beach, Florida, for the wedding. It's in the panhandle of Florida. According to David Peterson, that would be on more the West Coast. Dave Peterson is from Florida, and he told us his parents moved to the West Coast, and I thought they moved to California. But to the Floridians, the West Coast is the Gulf Coast, the West Side. But anyway, it was a very nice wedding, and before the wedding on Sunday, it was the Sabbath, and we were talking to a group. There were quite a few of us staying in just one house where the wedding actually took place, or at least outside of that house, in a very nice setting, overlooking nice, wasn't the Gulf, but it was overlooking a nice waterway. But anyway, we were talking to quite a few in a group there that were members of the church, and there was one owner of a business that explained that he could not handle the complaint calls that came in unless he had, and then he named it. He said, if I didn't have ... he said, I wouldn't be able to handle the complaints. And I thought, as he was talking, since the wedding was coming up, I thought, well, what he just said is a key ingredient that is used not only in business, but in our Christian life and in our marriage. So I mentioned that to him, and he wondered what he had just said, because about a couple of minutes after he had said that, I said, you just hit on the key ingredient in marriage. And it's like, what did I say? Because, you know, he was rattling some things off that were really good about how to handle complaints of... He's in insurance is what he's in. And there are a lot of complaints about insurance, as we know. So the subject is today, the key to a successful marriage. Now, the reason I'm continuing with it, I gave this sermon down in Santa Rosa Beach, and also I gave it last week in Kansas City. But the reason I'm continuing with it is because we find in Ephesians 5 that when Paul is discussing marriage and talking about what the duties, responsibilities of a husband is in order to properly care for his wife in this case, or what the responsibilities of a wife would be in properly doing her job as a wife. It says later on in that same chapter in Ephesians 5 that I'm really not talking about a physical marriage. I'm talking about Jesus Christ and the church. And of course, on the day of Pentecost, we are talking about Jesus Christ and the church. In fact, we know that the New Testament, better yet, the New Covenant Church, was established on the day of Pentecost. The head of the New Covenant Church was established a few weeks before, as we know, when Jesus Christ was the first one to inherit the kingdom of God. That's kind of, you know, you look at that phrase and you think, well, how could he inherit the kingdom? But that's the expression that is used in Galatians 3. And, of course, we would then be inheritors or co-heirs with him. So it ties in, that is, the subject of marriage ties into Pentecost. It ties into the establishment of the New Covenant Church and the relationship that Jesus Christ has with the church. And basically what we see in all of this, if two converted people cannot have a good marriage, then that's very telling. Now, I say that just in general, that it's very telling, because I don't want to necessarily get too specific what is it telling about? Well, it could be telling about the husband not doing his part. Could be telling about the wife not doing their part. Could be telling about a number of things that are problematic in the marriage. So we all have to, and God knows with all of us what the problem is. And definitely whenever we have two people get together, and one is female and one is a male, it's hard to go from being totally independent, especially if you're maybe 50 and have never been married. As a man and 50 and never been married, as a woman, you develop very independent lives, right? And I think it's a little harder than when you're maybe 22 and you're not quite so independent. But whatever the case, God knows what each of us needs in our marriage so it can be more successful. But we do know that marriage has been taking a beating over the decades. If we take a look at it from the 1940s, divorce rates, and I have to be careful when I make a statement here, divorce rates have been rising dramatically. Now that said, maybe not so dramatically when people begin living together without getting married. So the divorce rates can go down during that period of time. But in one sense, when you are living together and then there is a breakup in that, it should be counted as a divorce, is what it should be counted. So divorce rates have been rising. We know that. And we also know the sins of Sodom. And I'll just say it as it is, although I noticed that Mr. Johnson in about class 14 used the term LGBTQ, but that can get us in trouble as time goes by. We realize that as more people give their okay with such a group, that there's going to be more against us, against maybe even the Catholic Church. I think even recently, wasn't there a bishop who said that these two politicians should not be taking communion or mass because they voted pro on the Sodom issue. I'll just put it that way, and maybe it was the abortion issue. That's what it was. And the cardinal would not back him up on that one. So much for the Catholic Church making a stance. But anyway, the sins of Sodom are sweeping over the country and no doubt over the entire world. It was in October 21st, 1964, that's 55 years ago, that a movie came out entitled My Fair Lady. How many of you have seen that, My Fair Lady? So there's quite a few. It's a neat movie to watch, but when you watch that movie that hit the American theaters at that time, if you were to believe Professor Higgins, remember Professor Higgins, you would never end up getting married. Professor Higgins was played by Rex Harrison, and he had this, I'll call it a song, I'm an Ordinary Man, and it wasn't so much a song as it was almost poetry. And then there was Eliza, who was the Cockney flower girl on the stages in England. It was played by Julie Andrews, which I didn't know until I looked it up last week. So when I throw these things out, it's not like I have a really good memory. My memory is a week old, and it's okay for 1 week. But in the movie, of course, it's played by Audrey Hepburn. And here are some of the lines. I don't want to read all of this. I'm an Ordinary Man by Rex Harrison in My Fair Lady. He starts all of this by saying, you know, he's living a life that is free of strife. But then he goes on to say, you remember, let a woman in your life. This is not pro women, by the way, as you remember. Let a woman in your life and your serenity is through. She'll redecorate your home from the cellar to the dome and then go on to the enthralling fun of overhauling you. Really great, isn't it? So if you're a guy and you really believe that, what's going to happen? And then he pats himself on the back quite a few times. But then he says, let a woman in your life and you invite eternal strife. Let them buy their wedding bands for those anxious little hands. I'd be equally as willing for a dentist to be drilling than to ever let a woman in my life. Wow. Some of you maybe now don't want to watch this movie if you haven't. And then he says he's a very gentle man, even tempered and good-natured, who you never hear complain, who has the milk of human kindness by the quart in every vein. A patient man am I, down to my fingertips, the sort who never would, never could let an insulting remark escape his lips. A very gentle man. And then next, you know what's coming. But let a woman in your life. And patience hasn't got a chance. She will beg you for advice. Your reply will be concise. She'll listen very nicely and then go out and do precisely what she wants. And none of you women fit this description, I'm sure. Well, you know, in a multitude of counsel, there is wisdom. So just because your husband, you know, gives his counsel doesn't mean it's going to be wisdom. And then again, he just pats himself on the back about being a quiet living man who prefers to spend the evening in the silence of his room. And that's a problem. Actually, this is why he's going to have a problem if he gets married, if he just likes being by himself. But this is the type of thing that, in a humorous way, comes out, and it is not promoting marriage, is it? It is just not. And Satan is very able and does use humor to bring about, to give us information that is not quite right, not quite biblical, not quite godly. So what do we have? Well, we have a lot of knowledge concerning marriage. Over the years, I've counseled scores, I guess I would say, a couple hundred individuals in marriage counseling. The marriage I performed for John and Charlotte was, I think, my 99th wedding that I performed. And there was, until the church got smaller, it would be probably now 150. But sitting down and just going through all of the information from a biblical, we use the Bible, of course. I'm always aware more when I do that of my own personal problems in marriage. I think, you know, I need to go home and treat my wife better, because I'm counseling both the women and the men, but I'm not seeing it from a female point of view, because I'm a male, but I can apply to what God says to me and the changes that I need to make. But we have a lot of knowledge out there, and the knowledge is not the key. The knowledge is not the key. I think all of us are aware of books, and forgive me because I'm going to mention a couple books that come from probably the 1980s, maybe. Men are from Venus, or I think men are from Mars, women are from Venus, wasn't it? Letters to Karen and Philip was another one. And then go down to a bookstore and you'll see literally scores of books on the stands. And historically, probably hundreds of books on marriage. I don't know about this. I'm probably going out on a limb and showing you how unknowledgeable I am, but the library in Alexandria, Egypt that burned down, I'll bet it had books on marriage, probably. And there are counselors out there. We have a Prepare and Enrich program that we use in the church. It comes out of Chicago. A lot of counselors use it. In fact, when I had to register once again and upgrade the Prepare and Enrich license that I had, I was sitting with about a half a dozen Lutheran ministers, which was quite the experience too. But they were the ones putting on the class for registering once again for Prepare and Enrich. But it's a good assessment. It's a very good assessment from just a worldly point of view. They didn't go into a religious point of view also, but it was very good. If the parties knew each other well enough. And I'll just might mention there that I don't usually give it to people if they've just met at the feast and then they talk on the telephone or they're texting and emailing, because it doesn't work in most cases. Not that the marriage can't be successful, but the assessment won't work because they don't know each other well enough. But again, that doesn't mean they couldn't get married and wouldn't have a successful marriage. They certainly could. But their initial assessment would be off. It would be askew. We know the Bible has God's knowledge, and so knowledge is very, very important. But knowledge in itself does not give us the key. I'll just tell you a short story about my wife and I dating. Maybe not dating. I'll just tell you that when we were in California, it was my junior year. It was her sophomore year. And we had known each other for 2 years by that time. Well, a year and a half maybe by the time I posed the statement. It wasn't a question. But we knew each other well enough, and I had pretty much, well, I'll just tell you that when I was a sophomore, I had over 100 dates. A date would be a Friday night Bible study date. A date would be a Sabbath date. And a date would also be an after-Sabbath date. So you could get 3 dates. And then also a date would be going to Spokesman's Club. You know, you'd have, but you'd want to get to know the different gals. And some of them you would say, I will never marry that person at all. And with my wife and I, we knew that we would never marry each other when we first met. But that changed as we got to know each other. And so I said, you know, when I come back from England, I'm going to marry you. I told the story. But I was over in England, and when it came to the time to choose a minister, there was no one over there who was going to be back in Pasadena, but Mr. Armstrong was over there. And I knew him and his wife well enough, and I look back and think, why wasn't I fearful of asking Mr. Armstrong to perform our marriage? But I did. And he looked at his assistant and said, well, am I going to be there on June the 26th? And the assistant said, yeah, you'll be there. And he said, okay, I'll perform your marriage. So 2 days before, you know, in the meantime, I travel back to Pasadena. And I'm there a week, and we're going to be married. And on Friday, Mr. Armstrong is going over some of the details of what we'd be doing. As we, you know, when we'd walk down the aisle and, you know, all that the basic ceremony entails. And then he looked at us and he said, have the two of you been counseled? And we looked up and said, no, we had not been counseled by anybody. Now, we had classes, we had knowledge. She had classes where she was and I had classes where I was. But he said, have you read my book on the numerology? And we said, yes. And he said, that'll do. Now, there are ministers now who would freak out, I'm sure. No, you need 7 counselings. You need 3. You need 2. My 5th marriage that I performed, and looking over some records here a few weeks ago, my 5th marriage that I performed was in Columbia. No, it wasn't in Columbia. It was in Pueblo, Colorado. And both were over 80. So if you're going to counsel someone for marriage, they've been married before and they're over 80. And here I am at the time. This was, I was 28. I was 28 years old. And they're in their 80s and I'm going to counsel them on marriage. And the answer is no. I'm not going to counsel them on marriage. I figured they knew a lot more about marriage than I did. My 6th marriage that I performed were a couple couples. They were also over 80. I still remember the woman saying, I went out and got some red pajamas for both of us. They're in their 80s. And am I going to counsel them? And the answer was no, I actually didn't counsel them. But because, you know, you're 28 and they're 52 years older than you are. So there's a time for all things. And that was not a time for me to counsel people on marriage. But Mr. Armstrong knew something. What did he know? What did he know that would bring about success in our marriage? Well, he prayed a prayer in asking God to unite us that was a wonderful prayer. I still remember a lot of it. In fact, we have a tape. He's kind of in the background because there was a lot of noise, but you can decipher what he said. And it's the whole marriage is taped. Literally taped back then. I don't know if everybody knows that there was tape back then, but there was. But he knew something about marriage, and I will first of all give us some biblical knowledge before I go into the key. Ephesians 5, if we can go to Ephesians 5, verse 22 through 24. Ephesians 5, verses 22 through 24. There was, by the way, as I think about this, and I don't have some things in my notes, but I do remember there was a fellow in Australia who was very well known, not so well known that I remember him, but I do remember enough to know that there were quite a few couples from the United States who would go down to Australia and listen to his seminar from both him and his wife. And about 3 years after one party that I knew who went down there, 3 years after that couple who were giving the seminar ended up being divorced. And yet they gave very good knowledge. It wasn't that they didn't give good knowledge. It was very helpful. We're not knocking that at all, because there's some wonderful knowledge, wonderful books out there that are very helpful. Really is. But they don't give the key in most cases. Maybe some have stumbled across or mention it. But Ephesians 5 is knowledge from God about marriage. In verse 22 through 24, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church, and he's the Savior of the body. And just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything." And then in verses 25 through 28, "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it." And in verse 28, "So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself." And that, of course, is all so very true. So this knowledge is inspired by God. And we could go into detail in all of this, as we have in the past. But we see that there are certain specifics that we must do. It's knowledge that we must do to have a successful marriage. Now, today, if people do decide to get married, there quite often is no mention of, one point in particular, and that is, wives, submit to your husband. I was asked by a friend if I would perform the marriage of their daughter. And I said, well, yes, I would, but in the marriage ceremony, I mentioned what I say to husbands and what I say to the wife. And my friend said, well, let me go back and ask my daughter. And the daughter said, oh, no, I will not have the word submit in my marriage. So, and that's, understandable in this day and age, where it's kind of a 50-50 deal. And no one's going to submit to anyone except by, you can't have a marriage where someone isn't submitting. Someone's going to call the shots, make the final decision. But here we have then, wives are to submit. When I look at this, I had etymology for a year, and the word sous means under, or and metra would be in French, or maybe in any of the Latin languages. It would mean to put yourself under, basically, literally, to put yourself under, as the church does to Jesus Christ. Now, let me add a couple things with this. It's to your own husband, and then it's in the Lord. I say in the Lord because we have Acts 5:29, which tells us, and I'm not going into a lot of detail on some of this because I do want to make sure we cover the key. But here you have in the Lord, that means that if your husband wants you to go down and buy a $2 million automobile, what was the $2 million automobile that was purchased this last week by a billionaire? And he had it for 30 minutes and someone wrecked it. Someone crashed into it. $2 million vehicle. And didn't say whose fault it was, but whatever the case, can you imagine? But if I said, Marion, we are going to go down and buy this $2 million vehicle. If my wife said, oh, no, we're not, would I say, you've got to submit to me? She would say, no, I don't have to. I have to obey God. And he said, you shouldn't be coveting, right? That's what she would tell me. Well, naturally, I would be coveting, and you can't back up covetousness. So the woman is always the one who chooses. She has the choice to decide if she's going to submit. And if it's not, if she doesn't believe that it's right, that it's the husband is sinning by doing it, then there has to be a choice made. And again, it doesn't matter what it is. The woman always determines whether she will put herself under in any given situation. She has to make that choice. The husband cannot make the wife submit. It's impossible. You can't. Submission starts in the mind, and how does any husband get into the mind of a wife and make her change her mind? She might do something, and not want to do it, and that's not submitting. But there's also be a Sarah, 1 Peter 3:1-6. 1 Peter 3:1-6. Likewise, you wives, 1 Peter 3:1, be submissive to your own husbands. I remember appointing a woman when I was in San Antonio. I was also the coordinator of the feast site in Corpus Christi that year, and I appointed a woman to be over all of the music. She coordinated all of the music, and I got some riff from that. Like, how can you have a woman over men? And it's like, it says, be submissive to your own husbands, is what it says. And she was a very talented woman, very skillful herself, and there was no reason in the world that she shouldn't be, coordinating the whole group, and she did a fine job. And thankfully, there weren't a lot of men, but, some guys didn't like it too well. But then it goes on to say that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives. Sadly, in New King James, it says conversation. Conduct is what it is, what it should be. And isn't it true that when we let our light shine, when we live a Christian life, that does more than any conversation? We want people coming and asking us biblical questions because of the life we live. Then it says, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. And then it says, don't let your beauty be that outward adorning of arranging the hair, of wearing the gold, or putting on of apparel. In other words, don't let that take precedence at all over a godly conduct. Let it be the hidden person of the heart. And by the way, he was saying also, you can overdo, the outward appearance, definitely. But let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible ornament of a gentle and quiet spirit. So the gentle and a quiet spirit goes along with this, which is very precious in the sight of God. Then it goes on to say, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. Now, when you read the Bible, this word Lord, I'm not going to call my husband Lord. And if I were a wife, I wouldn't call my husband Lord either in this culture, because it has a different meaning, doesn't it? It just does. But it's a term of respect, and that word Lord lets your mate, your husband, know that you're the one in charge. You're the one that has the final say-so in all of this. There's that attitude is what it's talking about. Lord literally means master. But again, we don't call our husbands master either. It's just a matter of fact that our husband is in charge. If we're a woman who is married to that husband. And it says, whose daughters you are if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. Now, the husband has a Lord also. The Lord of the husband is Jesus Christ. So it's not that the man doesn't have a Lord, but in the same way as Christ is the Lord of the husband, the husband is the Lord of the wife. It's that same relationship is what it is. So all women need to have that attitude of Sarah and be able to say yes. In whatever culture it would be, yes, you had the final say-so. But also, with a Sarah, I come to this next point, and that is, be a Sarah, and also say, no, Lord. Now, you might not get that out of this, you know, but the point in all of this is not yes, no matter what. Yes, Lord, yes, Lord, yes, Lord. It can be no, Lord, no, Lord. In other words, that no with respect, right? Just like we might say to Jesus Christ, and I'm not going on with that, because you never say no to Jesus Christ, right? So you can't do apples to apples here, because Jesus Christ is always going to be right. But Moses sure had a good conversation, didn't he? I still get a kick out of God saying, Moses, your people, whom you led out of Egypt. And Moses comes back and says, no, these are your people that you led out of. So it's like he did say no, you know, so you see that friendly relationship. God kind of had a sense of humor, I believe, in all of this. But the woman can say no, but with respect. There always has to be that respect. And remember the story of Ishmael, when Ishmael was about 12 years of age, and I think Isaac had been weaned by this time, and I don't know how old he was, maybe 2 or 3. Weaning age was maybe a little longer back then. But anyway, I think the point was he was being circumcised on the 8th day, and maybe it was really early. I'd have to go back. It was late enough. I think Isaac was old enough where when Ishmael started mocking him that it hurt little Isaac's feelings. So Isaac was old enough, and Sarah said, we've got to get Ishmael and Hagar out of here. And remember, Abraham, in talking to God, when God said, you will have a son, Abraham basically said, well, I already have a son. And please, you know, bless the generations through Ishmael. And God says, no, it won't be Ishmael. So Abraham was very close to his son, as we expect he would be. But now God, Sarah is saying, no, you have to get rid of him. That is something. When you have a son, you're very close to a son, and you are told by the wife, you have to send them away. And basically, she was saying, no, Abraham, when he said, I'm not going to do it. No, Abraham, you have to send Hagar and Ishmael away. No. Did she yell at him? Well, it doesn't say how it happened, but we do know she considered him Lord. That was an attitude. Did she ever have a carnal moment that would give justification to any woman? She maybe did. Maybe did. But the whole thing is, God is showing us here at 1 Peter 3 that there's an attitude there that was a practiced attitude. And who knows, Sarah was a human being. I was going to say a woman, just a human being like anybody who could let down and maybe get upset. But God said, Abraham, listen to Sarah. Listen to Sarah. She is right. You have to send Ishmael away. But the attitude still has to be, whether it's yes or no, it still has to be one of respect and a quiet, gentle spirit, because that's what the Bible says. With the husbands, let me go to Colossians 3 and verse 19. Colossians 3 and verse 19. Because here is a general statement to the husbands. Husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them. Is it possible to be bitter toward your wife? Well, if the wife doesn't do what you think she should do, then it would be possible, I suppose, to be bitter. But God says, no, do not be bitter toward your wife. And I think when a person would be resentful or have revenge, I think the bitterness would already be there, don't you? If they would already have revenge, resentment, I think there would be a bitterness. Basically, he's getting to the heart and core of a problem that a husband might have toward their wife. Do not be bitter toward them. In the notes down here, once in a while, commentaries have good notes. This is in the this Bible so old. The New King James Open Bible Edition is what I use. And I'm still using this old one, although we got a new one. It says in the notes here, the husband cannot live with his wife, as Peter says, unless he loves her in the way Paul means. The love that a husband has is commanded to have for the wife is not primarily sexual or emotional, though both of those concepts are involved. It is a love that loves in spite of the response or lack of it in the one loved. So if you don't get the right response, you might be bitter. And God says no. It is the kind of love that God has for the world. A husband can only love his wife properly if he's a Christian and under the control of God's Spirit. The two responsibilities of the husband has in the family are to dwell with his wife according to knowledge and to render to his wife the honor which is due to her because she is his wife. To dwell together. And if you'll note all of us husbands, to dwell together with his wife means that the husband must take his wife into every aspect of his life. There are to be no areas of his life where there are signs that say, private, husband only, wife keep out. In other words, husbands, we don't go back to our teenage years and put notes on our door. I didn't have those notes on our door. You know, we couldn't do that in our house, have a private room where Dad and Mom couldn't come in, or our brothers and sisters. But we should not have private keep out. In fact, basically with husbands and wives, if you're going to live in happiness, then you are talking openly with each other. Maybe not agreeing all the time with each other, but you're talking openly, and there's never a time where it's private keep out. This is my life, you stay away. Like Professor Higgins would have wanted in any marriage that he would have had, private keep out. So I thought that is so good. So if you get picked up by a policeman when you are in that $2 million car and you get a $5,000 ticket, then make sure you tell your wife. I did talk to a minister not too long ago who said his son had this really fantastic car that could go, from 0 to 60 and what would be fast? 6 seconds would be fast, I know that. Whether that fast or not, but he had this open road, a kid was in the car with him, and he opened it up at night about 12 midnight, and there just happened to be a policeman on that very isolated road, and the ticket was $1,000 with community service, and his license taken away. So the kid got rid of the car is what happened. And he only did it that once. Sure. But again, very important. We already read Ephesians 5, verse 25 and 28. So husbands love our wives. Now, with husbands and wives, and when we realize that Jesus Christ is talking about the church, we're talking about love that a couple would have for Jesus Christ, that we all would have for Jesus Christ. The word love applies in marriage, we know, to husband and wife. So what is love? I looked up this, it was a term that I used when I went into Google. It says, it was, I love you because. That's what I typed in. I love you because. There were over 115 sweet things to say to a person when you're telling them, I love you because. So listen to some of this and think in terms of God's love and how He wants us to love. I love you because when you laugh, you crinkle your eyes like an old person. Well, if they're 21, I wouldn't want my wife to be looking like an old person, but they like that. But think of this now. You crinkle your eyes. I love you because, and I won't repeat that anymore. When you sing along to songs on the radio, you really get into it. Because you can be crazy. Because you can't cook. She'd be out in my book. Sometimes you have such a dark, twisted sense of humor. You smell good. You make me feel cherished. You know what I need. You're beautiful inside. being around you is a comfort. You can be a little evil sometimes. You are so, you feel and care so deeply about people. You're an amazing kisser. You're a mess. You're a mystery to me. You saved the last cookie for me. Yeah, I think I'd go for that girl. But anyway, we can go on just a few more. You have a bad day, you don't take it out on other people. You have the small wicked smile. You're a good listener. You eat ice cream straight from the carton. You have good manners. You know how to make others people feel special. Now, let me mention here that there's a difference in what we're looking for in a mate. So I'm not knocking, you know, everything I said here. When you take a look at this, if I'm looking in a mate, you know, in a future wife, I'm sizing up what she does, you know, does she cook well, you know, and in fact, I forgot to ask Marion, and I wrote her a letter from England, and I said, you know, I forgot to ask you if you can cook. And I said, but we can live on love and apple crisp, I think is what I told her. I didn't really mean that. in these things, you want your husband or your wife to be a good listener. So, again, I'm not knocking these 115 items, or there's a lot of good information here, but really, is that godly love? I love you because you're a good kisser. Okay? Do you want your mate to be a good kisser? Well, yeah. Suppose, but you're not going to find out till you marry him. Well, guess what? I did not kiss my wife until 2 days before I married her. Of course, I was in England. But if I would have on campus, you, Ambassador College, you did not kiss your wife. In fact, holding hands, you had to, you know, holding hands was it's a romantic thing. And a little story on that. What time is it? We were in San Antonio, and I had a meeting with all the parents. We had a big YOU there, and I said, I don't want these kids going around holding hands. And one person said, well, that's nothing, Mr. Sergeant. The kids should be able to hold hands. I said, Mr., and I named his wife, I said, would your wife be willing to come up here and hold my hand during the rest of this meeting? And they're like, well, no. I said, well, why not? It's just not right. I said, it's romantic, isn't it? And it's like, yeah, it is. There's that touch, and it's like, take your arm, you can do a lot of things, but at Ambassador College, I thought that rule was really good, where you don't get close to someone until, you know, and holding hands, maybe a week before, maybe giving a goodnight kiss a couple days before, that's one thing, but boy, I'll tell you, when you're 22 years old, and you got really, how can you say this? But when you really are excited about each other and you want to get married, then you got to be careful. You really have to be careful. You're going to get in trouble. You definitely will. So have a good talk about Kansas City Chiefs. You know, that's a good subject. So there's a difference between what we're looking for in a mate and knowing what I must do to demonstrate love, okay? Can I show godly love to this person that I am going to marry? And this is where we come to, well, Fiddler on the Roof. I remember the husband asking his wife, do you love me? You remember that? And she said, I've had your kids, and I do your washing, and I do your ironing, and I do your cooking. Of course I love you. But is that love? And that's not what he was looking for, cooking, ironing, and washing. Because really, that's not love. The love would be God so loved the world that he gave. So can I give to the person? Can I give? This is knowledge now. Still knowledge, and it's not the key. Can I give? This is love that we keep God's commandments. That's agape love. And it's agape love that, of course, is going to keep a marriage together, isn't it? Love is laying down our life. This is all from 1 John. Laying down our life, and of course that's what it says in Ephesians, Christ laid down his life for the church. So you have giving, you have keeping commandments, you have laying down our life. If we go to 1 Corinthians 13, let's take a look at something here, 1 Corinthians 13, that really gets the point across. And of course it tells us in 1 Corinthians 13 what love is not. But notice one of the first thing that it states in verse 4 as to what love is. Love suffers long. Now, in these 115 sweet things to say, I love you because, they're fine. A lot of them are fine. Some of them are way off. You don't want to marry someone who has a dark, twisted sense of humor. I don't think so. Loves to sit down and watch horror movies at night. You know, I don't think you're going to want someone who's doing that. But love suffers long. When I get married, am I ready to give to this woman through good times and bad times? Through good times and bad times. So we show our love when we suffer a long time. We show our love when we are kind to one another. We show our love when, and I'm just in verse 4, when we don't envy. And when we don't prate ourselves, saying, you know, look at me, I'm so much better than you, maybe. Not puffed up, not arrogant. So God has a different definition to love. So what is the key? This fellow, and I'll get into the key here with a few scriptures as we begin winding up. But this fellow said, you know, when I take complaint calls, he said, if I didn't have dot, 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 he said, I wouldn't be able to do my job. And you know what he said? He said, if I don't have God's Spirit, then I can't do the job. I have to have God's Spirit to handle these complaints. And as you know, when dealing with the world or with people who do not care whether they really serve you or not, you know, there's tremendous amount of information lacking or attitude lacking, attitude better yet, in the world today. So the key is, and Mr. Armstrong understood this because in the numerality, guess what? If you read the numerality, you see that, and back then, by the numerality was what? It was not just living together. The numerality back then would have been being immoral. Not that people lived together. I don't think they did as much back then. But it was just breaking God's commandments. That was the numerality, and it was okay to break God's commandments, is what it was. So he knew when he wrote that book what it took to have a moral, or in this case, a successful marriage. And that's why he said, you'll be okay if you read the book. Because he knew knowledge is not the key. Knowledge is very important, very important. In a multitude of counsel, with knowledge, we are able to avoid major problems. And all it takes is one lack of knowledge to destroy a marriage, isn't it? So the key is God's Spirit. And I told all of those that I counsel, if I use Prepare and Enrich, I end my counseling with marriage by always saying, look, if you don't use God's Spirit in your marriage, it is going to fail. Or it's just not going to be successful, or it is not going to be a happy marriage. We have to use God's Spirit when it comes to marriage. We must. Otherwise, and if one is not, then the other needs to. Because if two people are not yielding themselves to God, then that is really a problem, isn't it? So, Romans 7. Romans 7, and then one verse or two chapter 8, and then one verse in James 3, and then John 15, and then we're done. So you know where I'm going here. Romans 7. Notice what the Apostle Paul said, who had knowledge. And again, I will just say that I believe he's in a bigger subject than just Romans 7. I believe that he's talking about why people sin in the first place. And he's saying that they don't have God's Spirit. But so he's going back in his own life and just showing that, verse 14, the carnal flesh is sold under sin. Verse 15, for what I am doing, I do not understand, for what I will to do. If we will to do something, we have knowledge to do it, don't we? We do. If I will to do something, I have knowledge to do it. That I do not practice, but what I hate, that's knowledge. What do I hate? Something about knowledge here. I hate doing something that I don't want to do. What I hate that I do. Bottom line, he asks a question here in verse 24. O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me? And he says, well, thank God, through Jesus Christ, I'll be able to practice what I cannot, or I end up not practicing. And then he says, verse 2 of Romans 8, the law of the Spirit of life in Christ has made me free from the law of sin and death. For what the law could not do, in that it was weak through the flesh, God did by sending His own Son in the likeness of sinful flesh on account of sin. He condemned sin in the flesh that the righteous requirement of the law might be fulfilled. So what is it? It's the law of the Spirit of life that is in Christ. In other words, we receive the Spirit through Jesus Christ. And we do receive the Spirit of Jesus Christ. So James 3, I won't go to it, but James 3 says, can a grapevine bear figs? So what do we have to do? Can a grapevine bear figs? No, it bears grapes. So let's finish up in John 15. John 15. Here before Jesus Christ is crucified, he tells us it's very important if we are going to do what is right, that we have to stay close to Him. He said, I am the true vine, John 15 and verse 1, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, He takes away. What is that fruit that we're to bear? Well, it's the fruits of God's Spirit, isn't it? And every branch that bears fruit, He prunes. In other words, if we're doing what's right, we're going to be corrected. It's going to hurt from time to time. Every branch that bears fruit, He prunes, that it may bear more fruit. You're already clean because of the word which I've spoken to you. In other words, knowledge is important. So that's the first step in cleaning us up, having the right knowledge. Abide in me and I in you, as the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine. Neither can you unless you abide in me. I'm the vine, you're the branches. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit. So we have to stay close to Jesus Christ. We have to have the mind of Jesus Christ. If anyone does not abide in me, he is cast out as a branch, is withered. They gather them up and throw them into the fire and they're burned. Basically, lake of fire. We're not a hell, fire, brimstone church, but basically it's lake of fire. We have to bear fruit. If you abide in me and my words, verse 7, abide in you, you will ask what you desire and it shall be done. It shall be done for you. By this my Father is glorified that you bear much fruit, so you will be my disciples. And as the Father loved me, I also loved you. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you that my joy may remain in you. What is the key? We have to be close to Jesus Christ and we have to have the mind of Christ. We have to. We've got to bear fruit. We can't say, well, I know it and that's good enough. We can't tell our mate, I want to do what's right and that's good enough. We can't say of our mate, well, I know they mean to do good but they can't. That's not a, we don't want to excuse our mate, although there is a time to excuse, you know, what people do for sure, but we're not talking about when someone practices sin. We can't excuse ourselves, can we? So we have to stay close to Jesus Christ and ask for the Spirit of God every day. If we're not asking for God's Spirit, then are we going to receive God's Spirit? And I find the answer is no. And we all know what it's like when we do not have that power of God's Spirit in us. But that's another sermon. Tomorrow I'm going to be going through the promise and showing the results of the promise, the many categories that fall under the promise that God gives to us. So happy marriage, if you're married. And have a good evening, and we'll see you all tomorrow.